I think the comment from our last questioner was also a lovely way of transiting from our global perspective into our next keynote address. If I can just say one thing and take the position as chair to add, we had a question that came from the audience about how we reconcile this focus on the school literacies and adult education. And what I would like to say from the perspective, if I put on my Learning and Teaching Scotland hat rather than my UNESCO hat for a minute, one of the things that we feel has been a really important move in Scotland in trying to address that link between the school and the adult community is by bringing the community's team into Learning and Teaching Scotland. And my colleagues who are here from the community's team, I think that they will agree that it hasn't been a situation where we wanted to see them coming in as a team that would in any way sit separate from the rest of our staff across the whole organisation. From the very 1st of April when they arrived in Learning and Teaching Scotland, it's been very much about how can we ensure that we get that continuum, that we get that sense of people working together, that it isn't here is the emphasis on 3 to 18 with the school and curriculum for excellence, and here is our learning communities team, that we really want to make sure that we get that breadth of emphasis in terms of developing literacy right across the organisation. But I think that was a very helpful question just to remind us of the importance of how we see that continuum working in Scotland. As we know, literacy is a challenge globally, and we've heard that quite clearly, and literacy remains a challenge in Scotland. So I'm very pleased to now call on my colleague from the University of Glasgow, Ralph Sinclair, to give us that Scottish perspective. Ralph has recently been appointed as the Dean of Graduate Studies in the College of Social Sciences, and he's also the leader of the Adult Education Postgraduate programme here in the University of Glasgow. Ralph has been working in adult literacies and adult learning for around 25 years, and he'll be known to many of you in the audience. In respect of his presentation this morning, in 2009, the Scottish Government commissioned a team of researchers across Europe, led by Ralph, to measure the literacy levels of the Scottish population using the same instrument as that in 1996 UK version of the International Adult Literacy Survey. And the report was published recently as the Scottish Survey of Adult Literacies 2009. So we look forward to your presentation, Ralph.
I'd like to start just by thanking everybody for coming out this morning, and thank you also to our international guests. We really appreciate your input here today. I think it transforms the event. There's many well-kent faces in the audience, so hopefully people will have lots to say, because the people I do know in the audience always have lots to say. So it's going to be an interesting day. I also want to thank particularly Cathy and Adama for deciding that we have enough data just before I go on to talk about new data. Thanks for that, guys. But hopefully this will be useful. I'd like to specifically thank and acknowledge two of the colleagues who were part of the lead team for the survey that we did, Lynn Tett from the University of Edinburgh and Cathy McLachlan from the University of Glasgow. There's been a lot of talk about Ralph Sinclair led the survey, but actually it was a joint endeavour, and I do just want to underline that. It's very important to acknowledge. Okay, so the survey that was published August 13th, 2010, basically represents 2 years of our lives for the three authors who are named up there. And this wasn't necessarily our plan when we started it, but that's worked out. This is the first survey of literacies in Scotland, as Michael mentioned, since 1996. And it uses the same instrument that was used in 1996. Now, the results of 96, most people know them. Basically, what it showed was that over 50% of the Scottish population did not have what was considered at that point to be a functional level of literacy. Now, that was a pretty stark message, and wasn't necessarily a particularly helpful message, in that it was a bit unnuanced, and also it wasn't a very intuitively convincing message. The idea that after 135 years of compulsory education in Scotland, we would have over half the population unable to function in a modern society. I suspect actually lost the results quite a lot of credibility, because people were looking around and going, actually, you know, that just doesn't fit particularly well. So I think what we learned from 96 is that, first of all, this kind of survey really only measures one particular type of literacy in one particular context. It doesn't tell us everything that people can do in their lives. The other side of that, though, is that within the particular type of literacy that we're examining with these surveys, the results are actually very informative. And in terms of thinking through what we're trying to do and how we get a handle of what's going on in the community, these kinds of surveys can provide really robust indicators. So that was how we went ahead with the 2009 survey. How do we create the most robust indicator we possibly can to tell us about this particular type of literacy? It used the same instrument as the original IELTS of 1996, with a few changes to recognize that people didn't really talk about MS-DOS as much as they used to do in 1996. Does anyone remember MS-DOS? Is it just me? So we made a few changes to it to make it a little bit more up to date. We also had a different sample from 1996. In 1996, it was a very small sample. It was about 704 Scottish residents, which actually isn't quite enough to get true random sampling and to get true generalizability from your sample. It also stopped at the Caledonian Canal. So if anybody lived north of the Caledonian Canal, Western Isles, Northern Isles, whatever, they just weren't asked. So that wasn't great. So this time, we were aiming for a sample of 2,500 people. We ended up, after all the data cleaning, the best quality sample that we had was 1,922 folk, which is quite a lot of people when you're considering that each of them are spending well over an hour doing this survey. So fantastic response, and a great deal of gratitude to the people who were willing to take the time to be involved. We also went all over the country. So we went up north, out west, and all this kind of thing, and we have full geographical coverage. What this means is that we can't really directly compare the results from 96 with the results from 2009. But it also means that we can be pretty confident that the 2009 results are telling us something that's important and real. We changed the analysis model also in 2009, which I won't go into because it's one of those wonky researchy things, and you guys really don't need to know that. It was conducted by the Universities of Glasgow and Edinburgh, as well as Gallup Europe. So they're a huge international polling company that we got involved to actually do the survey, and the National Foundation for Educational Research, which is based in Slough in England, and are probably the best in the UK at working with this kind of big data set. They do the TIMSS, they do the PISA, they do the PIAAC, they do all that kind of stuff for the UK. So how does this survey work? You may be asking yourself, you may not be, but I'm hoping somebody is because I'm about to tell you. People are actually visited at home. The whole thing is a household survey. So basically, you'd be sitting watching Coronation Street, be a knock on the door, and it'd be one of our Gallup folk. They do a background questionnaire with the interviewer. So we would ask you things like, are you working? What kind of job are you doing? Which age bracket do you fall into? What's your household income? Tons of stuff. We gathered loads of background information on people. And there's a lot of work still to be done in analyzing a lot of this data. Then folk would answer six questions, and the point of these six questions was simply to make sure that folk had the literacy skills in English needed to move on to the main kind of assessment instrument, because we didn't want to have people who perhaps didn't have English as a first language, or perhaps for whatever reason hadn't completed schooling, and then ask them to do quite a difficult assessment when it wasn't something they could handle. In actual fact, nobody was filtered out by this. And in fact, several people said, wow, those six questions are really easy. So it was quite good, actually. It kind of built people's confidence going into the main body. And then they answered around 40 questions, which were allocated randomly from a batch of over 100 questions. So if you agreed to do it, you would do your 40 questions, and there you go. Average time for this was about an hour and a half. It could take over 2 hours for some people. The shortest that I saw was 24 minutes, which was really flying. They really, really... they knew how much they earned before we went there. So then what happens? Okay, we've got all this information. We've got all this data. I mean, just tons of data. The data sets, if you print them, are hundreds and hundreds of pages. I think the condensed data set is over 600 pages of A4. So you've got a lot of information. Then you take the way that all those 1,922 people answered the 40 questions, and you model the population based on this. So first of all, you expand it out. So if all these people had answered all of these questions, what would that look like? And then you go, great, there's a nice robust sample. Let's look at what it means across the whole population. I hope this isn't too dull for people, but as I say, 2 years of my life, so give me a break here. So the findings then group the population into five levels of literacy ability, which you'll be familiar with. One is the most basic, five the most advanced. Typically what happens in IELTS-based surveys is that there's a relatively small number at level five, and so the proportions at four and five are collapsed together. And so we talk about level one, two, three, and levels four and five as four categories. We also measure three scales of literacy, or three different domains of literacy, is what we're trying to do. The first one is prose, which is reading continuous text, book, magazine, that kind of thing. The second one is document, which is working with forms and the kind of interaction that involves. And the third is quantitative literacy. This is often referred to as numeracy, but it's actually not. It's a bit different from numeracy, and it's quite important to recognize that. It's about working with text to identify particular quantitative information and perform a very simple arithmetic function on it. So it's different from a more expanded numeracy test. Okay, what did we find out? This was going to be a dramatic pause, but thanks to Michael, thank you, Michael, you already know what we found out. Which is that literacies in Scotland are generally strong. Now, one of the things that we were trying to do philosophically with the survey was to really fit in to the philosophy, the wider philosophy of literacies in Scotland, which is about social practices. It's about moving away from deficit constructions of this and asking, instead of what are people lacking, saying what supports do people need to expand and strengthen what they already have. And so that's the way the question was asked. So when we look at it and we see results that say almost three quarters of Scottish residents have at least one skill at level three and above, which is what we OECD identify as what you need to live in a modern society, that's a pretty good message. That's a really important message. And I don't think it diminishes in any way the importance of literacies education and what we're trying to do. But it does start with a good, intuitive argument that makes sense to people, that fits, I believe, with people's everyday experience and adds credibility to the next bits of the argument. And so that's how I see that working. As I say here, the majority of Scots goes at level considered appropriate by the OECD. As you'd expect, we've had compulsory education and adult education and higher education in Scotland for a long time. But, and isn't there always a but? And again, this was going to be a dramatic moment. Thank you, Michael. Over a quarter of us who are living in Scotland are likely to reach the limits of our literacy from time to time. And this isn't about people who test at level one. This is about all of us, really. We're all going to come to points in our life, in our work, in what we're trying to do, where we need support, where we reach the very end what we can do and what we can't do. I mean, I work in a university, and this happens to me, frankly, all the time. It tends to be around numeracy for me, but there are limits which I bang up against. And over a quarter of us in Scotland are likely to reach those limits more often in their everyday lives. And that's the issue that we have to take forward out of this. One in 25, that should be one in 28, I apologize, of us, 3.6%, have very limited literacy abilities indeed in terms of the form of literacy this survey tested. I mean, very, very limited. Less than you would expect from finishing primary school. So 1 in 28 sounds like quite a low ratio, but actually it would be, of the people who are here in this room, there'd be four or five folk in this room who would really be having a hard time with reading and writing in their everyday lives. Their lives will have adjusted to accommodate this to some extent. But that doesn't mean that that support isn't incredibly important for these folk as they face new challenges as they go through their life. So Adama's message about lifelong learning, I think, is a very important one. Who are these folk, you may be wondering? Well, what we managed to identify pretty strongly is that literacy skills are related to a number of structural elements in people's lives, such as, not surprisingly, how long people go to school for, their school and university qualifications, their income, very strong correlation, whether people are employed, again, a strong correlation. The stronger people's literacy skills, the more likely they are to be employed. The two go together. The type of occupation that people are in, and whether people live in an area with deprivation. None of this is particularly surprising. None of this is news. But the strength of the relationship is really important to acknowledge. Finally, literacy practices at home and work. Literacy practices at home and work are kind of an interesting one, and probably one that's important to pay attention to, in that it also affects the kind of support that parents are able to provide their children with as we're looking at the next generation of Scottish residents. So, in summary, because I do want to finish and let you guys go on to the next bit, which is going to be much better than me talking, is that literacy skills in Scotland are strong. We've got a lot to be proud about. But the people who are missing out are the same people who are missing out on everything else. The link between literacy skills and poverty is absolutely indisputable. And we must understand the work that those of you who are here today who are practitioners are doing. We must understand that that work is essentially anti-poverty work and fits into a larger suite of support that we have to give the most marginalized people in our nation. So that's the message of the survey. I'll stop there. Has anybody got any questions before we split up into groups? Yeah.
Hi, Ralph. Could you just explain what the levels relate to in terms of the SCQF level?
The five levels of literacy that are measured by IELTS don't map onto SCQF. We actually did some work on this to find out if there was a robust way of mapping across the levels, and there really isn't because they're measuring different scopes of skills. Lalji.
Did you at all look at ethnic minorities and their levels of literacy and access to literacy?
We certainly tried to. We had parts of the instrument specifically tried to find out what folks' ethnic background was, what their first language was, where they'd gone to school, that kind of thing. In actual fact, the proportions of people who hadn't grown up in the UK and who weren't white British were incredibly small and just simply not statistically robust.
Ralph, I'm concerned that so far there's been no mention of Scots. Many of us in Scotland are speakers of Scots to some extent. There is tremendous social and emotional resistance in Scots speakers ourselves to recognising the diversity, the richness of this dialect, that we can call it a dialect. One of the things I think helps us with this is to look at other countries like Catalonia, especially Valencia, where there are whole sentences that can be spoken which have words which are simultaneously Catalan or Valencia and Castilian. That's a model I think that we can use in Scotland to try and overcome this Scottish cringe. When I taught in Easter House, I had just come back from a conference where I was interpreting for the European Social Forum, and I shared with my class there that there was a lot of Scots words and Scandinavian words, and I shared a sentence with them which had words like hik, which in Scots we have keek, and to keek out the windy, which to peep out of the window. And Scots speakers don't need a translation. Neither do Norwegians, neither do Swedes. And the joy on the children's faces to realise that they were speaking an ancient dialect which has trade links with Vikings, Hanseatic League, and that this was part of their heritage. No one had told them that before. And I feel very, very strongly that we are ignoring this in literacy, because people come to primary school or adults come to education, and the first message that they get is that the way they speak is not valid. So I suppose it's an observation, but it's an encouragement to...
I was hoping for a question on that one at the end.
It's simply an encouragement to take this on board and to say, is someone going to speak about this today?
I think it's a really important point. I think the focus of the survey particularly was again one particular form of literacy that has particular forms of resonance within society. So it wasn't designed to address that, but I would hope it would be something that the Scottish Government would take seriously and look at in the future.
Just before we do move into our discussion groups, if we could finish off this part of our keynote addresses by thanking Michael, Adama and Ralph, because I think that that perspective of the global and the local was a very refreshing start to the morning and just reminding us that we have to think of these things in a round. And on the one hand, while we're thinking globally, we're also thinking locally. And the connection between the two remains very important for us throughout our discussions today. So please, can you join with me and thank all of our speakers this morning?